everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, back in the saddle again. How was your little bit of your bout with COVID?
Wasn't that bad. A couple of coughing spells. I hate the dry hacking cough.
Yeah, I know.
I just waited it out.
Yeah.
How about you? Kind of hit you a little harder, I guess.
I had a little rough time. It's like it hit me totally unexpectedly, but tested positive and then negative after 5 or 6 days, which is a good sign, shows you've kind of got a robust still immune system. And it caught me by surprise because I had taken the shot in April. So I guess it's good news that now I've got some pretty good immunity for a while.
Double immunity. Yeah,
maybe till the holidays. I don't know. You can't count on anything, though. Anyway, it's Wednesday, midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. We're off and running on the 23rd of July, 2025. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. It's part of the Bustos Media Center here in central Tucson. 5 radio stations now operating under one roof. We're all doing very well. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice for Live Trusted News and Talk. We're in our 14 and a half full years now with the radio show and 37 and a half years for me in town in radio and TV. Worldwide live listening of our program and all of our podcasts going back to January of 2011 on the website buckmastershow.com. Our telephone interviews when we do our live line, and folks are always willing. I hope they're willing. They're always welcome, for sure, at 520-790-2040. If you'd like to be joining in, and we're going to be talking about Project Blue, which is a very controversial development proposal, but that's going to be our topic for pretty much the first half hour. The live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Jennifer Allen. Jen Allen joins me, one of 4 Democrats on the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. Jen represents District 3. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I am doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. It's been far too long since you were on our radio program. So Project Blue, I do want to point out to our listeners, the first public meeting since the Board of Supervisors by a 3-2 vote, you voting against it early on, but by that affirmative vote, that kind of kicked it over to the city of Tucson, and now the ball is in their court, and Nikki Lee, who was on our show Friday, congratulations to Nikki, really getting out front on this Project Blue. And she's got all sorts of IT and high-tech experience, which I certainly value her opinion. She was very instrumental, Jen, as you know, in getting this meeting set up. And I do want to tell our listeners where that meeting is. It's a public meeting at Mountain View High School. Not quite sure what that is, what the correct pronunciation is. 10,800 East Valencia Road, scheduled at 5 this afternoon. Doors open at 4:30 this afternoon. Okay, Jennifer Allen. Jen Allen, you were out front early on saying no to this. What jumped out at you? And you did your homework, which is great, but what were the overwhelming, as far as you're concerned, issues that just you could not move forward with this project?
Well, I think one of the things that really convinced me, that solidified my position, was just simply talking to other communities, other elected officials who were in the exact same position that we were and that the city council is going to be, and they regretted their decision. There is across this country kind of a buyer's remorse, if you will, for communities who have opened the door for data centers.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen just here in Arizona communities in the cities of Phoenix and Chandler, I think Mesa, Tempe, even Marana up the road, have put in place restrictions and new ordinances and guidelines around data centers because they have found tremendous impacts facing their neighborhoods and their area that they didn't anticipate. They were not told. In fact, they were often told otherwise. And they, you know, they just found that they had a lot of false promises.
By the way, it's Micah Mountain High School. Thank you, listeners. Boy, they jumped on that one quickly. My message has just lit up Micah Mountain, and I am told that is in the Rita Ranch area, so it's very appropriate that the public hearing is in that area because this is the area where the data centers would be going. It's kind of a like a data center farm that is being envisioned here, right, on the southeast side.
Yeah, you know, I think there's there has been some misperceptions around what data centers are.
Mm-hmm.
I think we saw at the Board of Supervisors meeting, the University of Arizona, Pima Community College representatives came and spoke in favor, and were really excited about an opportunity, thinking that this was going to bring high-tech jobs, innovation, be able to connect with students who are studying in the tech field. But the reality of what data centers are is that they're essentially warehouses
mm-hmm.
for computer equipment,
mm-hmm.
floor to almost the ceiling, just computer equipment. They're just servers.
Yeah.
And
the construction community has been in favor of this, and probably saw that op-ed, Tucson can't miss out on Project Blue, and that was from a representative from the Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 570. So there would have been. If this passes, there would be construction jobs initially, but then afterwards, kind of babysitting the, I don't know if mm-hmm. that might be an appropriate
it's
word.
It's security.
Security people mm-hmm. would have to be there, of course, maybe up to 150 people for the initial complex. But something that doesn't get talked about a lot, and I'm glad Nikki Lee came on our show Friday. Dylan Smith interviewed her because I was out with COVID, but they had a great conversation. And Nikki pointed out about these backup energy systems. You know, they can't just rely on TEP because we all know what can happen. We had an outage today, I think that it was about an hour, a large outage up in the central foothills. So if the power goes down, what do you think runs the data centers?
Diesel generators
mm-hmm.
That have triggered a lot of concerns in other communities around air pollution, around sound quality, and kind of the vibration and hum, because these aren't just, you know, the diesel generator that somebody is
like
running
your backyard.
At the campground next to you or tailgating.
Yeah.
These are massive diesel generators.
And there has been concern over some noise pollution in the area of these.
Noise pollution and air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
The area in which the at least for the data centers, the about 10 or so, that it's on the land that Pima County sold to Beal. That particular area, according to the Pima Department of Environmental Quality, mm-hmm. is already pushing the limits of our air quality limits there as it is now.
Yes,
so
that is true.
Dropping in diesel power generators, massive diesel mm-hmm. power generators, is likely to push that area over the limits of what air quality standards should be.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer Allen is here. Jennifer, Democrat, representing the 3rd District on the 5-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. We're talking about Project Blue, and there was a development today, and one of the unknowns had been, well, who is this mystery client? And thanks to some really good reporting using Freedom of Information requests, Arizona Luminaria was able to determine that Project Blue is the tenant, main tenant would be Amazon Web Services. And this is interesting because Fletcher McCusker and others have said that part of the deal with the disclosure agreement was if the client, if it got out who this was, the client would say, we're gone, we're pulling the plug. And as of this point, it doesn't appear that's going to happen. Some of your thoughts, Jen.
Well, you know, that's what we are told. I think one of the most frustrating parts of this whole process has been the secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
We had a non-disclosure agreement at the county that prohibited us from knowing all sorts of information. There's a
You did not sign, and this sometimes gets confusing. Elected officials did not and do not sign these. These are representatives from Pima County, the city, economic developers at the chamber, but you didn't sign it.
We did not. We were told that we are included under that NDA. I've
legally
heard,
or
legally, yeah. Legally. I've heard other communities where the electeds have been shocked at that interpretation. So I think we're still trying to poke and prod to get some clarity around that because this is not the first time the county's entered into non-disclosure agreements for economic development projects. And so there's a lot of steps that we are taking.
Would you like to see the whole idea about these non-disclosure agreements pertaining to Pima County revisited?
Absolutely. And in fact, two board meetings ago, I introduced and got approved the Pima County developing some kind of a policy reform around the use of non-disclosure agreements so that we can use them in economic development as more of a scalpel rather than a sort of a wrecking ball that has far-reaching effects that keeps decision makers completely in the dark. I mean, that was one of the things that was just so disturbing about our vote was how little information we had, but yet we're asked to make this very significant decision.
And then the timing, of course, with water increases being announced and TEP with power agreement or power proposals, which not necessarily had a direct result of the Project Blue, but the look was not good. The optics
were really bad. Because have been so many promises that this, you know, the 1.3 gigawatts of electricity that these data centers will require, that those costs will not be borne out by residential ratepayers. And so just the optics of a 14% rate increase being rolled out while we were still in the meeting, fresh off of the vote that resulted in approving it and moving it on to the next step in the process.
We are up against break number one, but rather than keep the caller over, we're going to take caller Matt. And Matt, make your question or comment real brief, because we are up against the first break. But go ahead, you're with Jennifer Allen.
Yeah, hey, Jennifer, very quickly, what happens if this whole deal does blow up? Is the land sold? Who owns it, and do we get it back? Assuming everything goes to heck. Thank you, bye.
Thanks, good question.
So my understanding of the sale contract, the land sale contract, is that it becomes null and void if the annexation by the city does not happen.
I see.
So that decision then gets kind of rolled back, money moves back.
Okay. So it's not a real concrete deal. It's dependent on what the city action is going to be. All right. Good question, though, Matt. All right, take a break right here, Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Jennifer Allen sticks around for segment number two. We're talking about Project Blue. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It is our midweek edition, and we're talking about probably one of the most important economic development decisions that I can recall, and I didn't get off the bus yesterday, here in Tucson. District 3 Democrat Pima County Supervisor Jennifer Allen is with us, and Supervisor Allen made it very clear early on after doing her homework she was voting against this. The final vote, of course, was 3-2 in the affirmative, which pushed it over to the city of Tucson. And to make Project Blue viable and to move it forward, the city of Tucson now will have to make a decision. Probably it's sometime in August about whether or not they want to move forward with this and then annex the land and such and such. And we do know it would be Amazon Web Services. But Jennifer Allen, even though we know who the end user is, that's probably not all that important, is it? I mean, it could have been Facebook or it could have been somebody else. It's not going to really change the dynamics of what is required to run the operation.
Correct. I mean, I think we all assumed, given the size of and the scope of how many data centers this was, you know, was going to become, that it was going to be an Amazon, a Google, a Microsoft, a Meta, mm-hmm. one of the big ones, mm-hmm. just given the complexity of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I understand that people have concerns about data centers, but they are something that are here with artificial intelligence. There have to be places where perhaps that you feel and that are more compatible than an area that has sustainability issues. And one of the things that we're hearing from the economic development community is, boy, if we say no to this, we're like dead in the water economically, economic development wise. Would you take issue with that?
I absolutely would. It might make us dead in the water for data centers that come to government bodies, right? Because there could still be data centers that establish themselves here on private land that are already part of the city of Tucson, mm-hmm. right? This particular process mm-hmm. has required a number of government body votes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be helpful mm-hmm. to send a message about the types of economic development that makes sense for Southern Arizona, for a drought-ridden desert,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and Southern Arizona that cares tremendously.
We hadn't really had any rain in 12 months until kind of a spotty current summer thunderstorm season.
Yeah.
But go ahead,
yeah. But we live in a community where people care strongly about the environment, mm-hmm. about water, about our desert, that care about clean energy. And so this is such a lightning rod issue that has really triggered so many people to get involved and speak out. And it's because we care. And it defines part of who our community is. Mm-hmm. Which does not mean that we are a community that doesn't support economic development. It's just certain kinds of economic development that are in sync and align with who we are as a community. Mm-hmm. So I think this actually helps us in many ways.
It clarifies perhaps Absolutely. The message of what is considered compatible for the environment that we live in. Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah. While we have you here, a couple of other county issues. How about affordable housing, this new budget? Do you like what you saw or see in the new budget?
I am excited about the prospect of investing in a long-term way for affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
The county approved, the last few budget cycles, we've approved $5 million for mm-hmm. For investments in gap funding, kind of mm-hmm. closing the gap to bolster affordable housing. This particular year, we bumped it up to $8.5 million, but we also said that we are going to be making, over the span of 10 years, a $250 million, plus or minus a few million, mm-hmm. to invest in affordable housing, which is both building more homes and filling that gap that we have in the community around affordability, but also making sure that we have the programs, the resources to help keep people in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
We still have an eviction rate that is startling and contributes to homelessness and instability within our community. So we need to continue to invest in ways that can support people staying in their homes, which includes things, people being pushed out because their utility rates, going back mm-hmm. to the conversation around
sure.
Project Blue,
mm-hmm.
their utility bills are getting so high.
Mm-hmm.
TEP has raised rates continuously,
yeah.
year upon year upon year. This 14% increase is not this is not out of the blue. It was in many ways predictable.
Mm-hmm. Of course, transportation, we still don't know, and the clock is running on the RTA next, the 20-year current program will sunset next year, and there's been some talk maybe Pima County could move forward with take over the taxing responsibility, but Steve Christie, the lone Republican, has resisted that. But you see that, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but as perhaps an avenue to explore.
Absolutely. I think we need to ensure that we are investing in transportation across Southern Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And RTA has been the vehicle to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a new tax. This would be a continuation of an extension of the existing tax. And if we are not able to get it out to the voters, I think if we can figure out how to get Pima County to be able to drive that tax forward as a vehicle, a taxation vehicle, then we should do that.
Mm-hmm.
People are concerned about roads, but they're also concerned about ensuring that we have transportation that matches our investment in housing and affordability and making our communities be ones that folks can get from point A to point B
mm-hmm.
safely, utilizing public transportation, that there's mm-hmm. bicycle lanes, pedestrian pathways. All of those things are important for the long-term growth and sustainability of Southern Arizona. And
one thing
I could also
sure.
add, just because we were down in
Green Valley
earlier today, and we were in Marana and then Ajo the other day, this RTA funding also supports some of the rural transportation.
Yes.
And it's in several places, it is the sole funder of rural transportation,
mm-hmm.
which is the means that people have to be able to get to doctor's appointments and other appointments in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's so critical to be able to take care of seniors, folks with disabilities, that they can get from point A to point B out in the rural areas. So, RTA is important. And we got to figure out, transportation is important, and we got to figure out a vehicle to do that.
And the getting back to economic development, saying no to RTA, It would be, I believe, Jennifer Allen, a huge blow as far as economic development. So I think that all of the county supervisors need to really think about this moving forward, because we have to, I believe, keep some kind of path showing economic developers in other places that come here that we do believe in a regional solution to issues like transportation.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the values of RTA and PAG, the Pima Association of Governments, is that it is a venue where local governments come together to figure out regional solutions and regional strategies. Mm-hmm. Because you know, somebody who lives in Marana is in comes to Tucson, right, for dinner or for shopping, and then goes to Aravaca for the weekend market. Like we are a region. And so our transportation investments need to recognize that.
And your District 3 is, the largest of the districts, isn't it? You go all the way to Ajo.
We're about 70% of all of Pima County.
Are you kidding?
No, we are. District 3 is 130 miles of the U.S.-Mexico border. It goes out beyond Ajo, including Cabeza Prieta.
And those Oregon people Hive. Feel like they need services too, right?
Absolutely.
And
so
then probably many times feel like they're completely ignored.
Yep. We hear a lot about kind of the forgotten stepchild.
Yeah.
Is the line that the experience of people feel in Ajo, mm-hmm, in Aravaca, in Amado, in Pitcher Rocks, mm-hmm, all of those areas. Because District 3 includes Marana.
Yeah.
It goes all the way up to the Pinal County line.
Huge.
Swings out to the Yuma County line.
All right, Jennifer Ellen, we hope to have you on a regular basis on the show.
Would love to.
Thanks you very much.
Me.
All right, midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, Troy Hutchison. So proud of this young man. He's gone from GoAZCats.com to a new gig. He is working for Sports Illustrated. He's now the beat reporter covering the Wildcats. We'll talk to him right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing is Zocalo Village Studios. This has been an unusual summer rainy season, to say the least. It's more like summer rainy season / Seattle Northwest. I know Tom's kind of chuckling, but he kind of knows what I mean. Normally, and I'm not complaining here, because after the last couple of summers with the where my Buckmaster bungalow seemed to be at the center of the down or outflow of some severe thunderstorms, had huge winds and uprooted trees. This has been a little different, and I think it's great for the plants, but I'd like to see it maybe every day or every other day, but right now we're going into a little bit of a dry spell, so I think it's wonderful. We've got the moisture, and I know because I talk to plants, a plant whisperer, I wish, that the plants at Green Valley, Green Things, and in Green Valley, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, are very, very happy right now, and a great time to be purchased and taken home and planted in your garden. Green Things over on East River Road, their website, greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business on site is zocalovillage.com. And we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go on the live line to Troy Hutchison. I'm so proud of Troy and want to say publicly that I think it's terrific. He's moved on from GoAZCats.com, which was a good gig for him, but now he is the kind of the beat reporter for Sports Illustrated, which I think is huge. And Troy, I'm sure you're pretty excited, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm getting to be the beat writer for Arizona Wildcats on SI here in Tucson. It's definitely a step up in terms of, you know, everything that comes along with that. So it's an exciting time right now.
Well, it may give you even, I would think, not that Go Easy Cats didn't have, you know, as good an access, but I think you, by very nature of now, you're like the Sports Illustrated guy in Tucson. I would think that's going to give you some pretty darn good access.
Yeah, you know, U of A was pretty good when I was with Go Easy Cats in terms of player interviews and all that, but it does seem a little bit easier now than it was back then to get stuff done, you know.
You know, I have been following college football for a long time. Grew up about 10 minutes from where the Northwestern University played their football games. My dad was a big-time athlete there during the 30s, and so we always had season tickets. So I know a little bit about college football, and I'll tell you, don't want to sound like an old guy here, but the college football of the old days is not like today, is it, Troy Hutchison?
I hear that a lot in terms of the revenue share. That's just gotten done. NIL transfer portal, and I agree with the transfer portal. Obviously, back in the day, it was harder to transfer than how easy and free-flowing is in college sports. But the reality of paying players, I know it's, you know, some fans, they don't love it, but the reality is that this was happening for a very long time. So this is just legal now, and it's all out in the open, and you know, it's no longer done in suitcases left in kids' locker rooms to go to universities anymore. So it's all out there in the open now.
The players all have a value, a monetary value, I assume, pretty much all of the bigger name players. What kind of value does some of these star athletes, like our quarterback, what kind of numbers are we talking about, Troy?
You know, the numbers, it's been wildly reported throughout college football. I know they said one some quarterback here who was a freshman was getting $3 million here. A UCLA freshman was getting $5 million here. That's kind of going to be reined in within the next couple of years with this new revenue share. But I know at Arizona how they do things is that the base of the roster gets around about 34,000 each player, and then from there it is performance based performance based revenue. I know it's a little bit different with Noah Fifita and for Tetero McMillan when they got that NIL deal from the U of A. Certain his name is escaping me right now off the top of my head that helped keep most of the roster on U of A's team this past season. But they took that roughly $4 million and split it amongst the team. They took their share, but they made sure that everybody else was fed as well.
That money then is coming out of a certain budget that is, are these donations from big donors?
Yeah, you know, it's not university money. I think that's one thing that some fans have a hard time wrapping around, wondering why is a university spending on players. It's not university money. Some of it, I'm sure, is in terms of athletics. If we're talking about, you know, meals, stuff like that, that's a given nature of it. But most of it is boosters and donors that are supplying these checks and writing these sponsorships and whatnot. So let's say Noah Fifita got a sponsor from Jim Click. It'd be Jim Click that would be making that NIL deal to keep Noah Fifita in Tucson. Now, that's nothing that's going on. I'm just using that as an example.
Mm-hmm. And so Fifita could have moved on like a lot of the roster, right, at the end of last season.
Yeah, well, and even the previous season, up there and there if he was going to move on to Washington with Jed Fish. And I do believe if Jed left for UCLA, let's say, I think the probability of that would have been higher given he's a Southern California kid. But even last season, it was rumored and reported by rivals that he was going to Utah. And I heard many people talk behind scenes that he'd be going to Utah. He shut that down. His father shut that down, and they decided to come back to Arizona. Now, rather that's Arizona put some NIL forth to keep him in Tucson, or he felt like it was home, maybe a mix of both. Who knows? But I do know Utah was trying to be in play for Fifita, and he never entered the portal. But a lot of the times during these situations, even though it is against NCAA rule, a lot of these players, before they even enter the portal, know exactly where they're going to go.
Mm-hmm. And I think the big donor that you were alluding to, I think it was Umberto Lopez, was one of the big donors in keeping Fifita here in town. So before we move on to this year's training camp, which is just next week, actually, Wednesday, salary cap... is that going to be something that will be coming along for college athletics, that there would be schools would be eventually limited on how much they could that you could pay the players is what I'm going with this, where I'm going?
I think there has to be. I think it needs to be more like a pro model in terms of having your salary cap. All teams now have a GM. It's kind of like the head of the scouting department, but they're looking to acquire talent, letting coaches know, here's the talent here, here's the talent there. We should go after this player and that player, not only in the portal, but in high school as well. But I think eventually you will have to have a salary cap because we've seen it get crazy. Texas Tech right now in their recruiting class, they have one of the top five recruiting classes, and they just paid an offensive lineman reportedly around $4 to $5 million out of high school.
What?
So when you have that situation going on, and you have the oil money from the Texas schools and stuff like that, it's hard to compete. So I do see a salary cap eventually, but I also see student athletes fighting that and trying to get rid of that, saying that how can you put a cap on how much we can earn? So it's going to be an ongoing battle.
How do the other teams in the conference, how do they stack up? They have a lot more money, or are we about midway in that, or what?
For football, Arizona, I would say, is probably near middle of the pack to the bottom in the Big 12. You know, you do have your schools like Texas Tech that just got an influx of booster money from somebody that owns an oil company out there in Texas. So they're near the top. Oklahoma State, that's another school with oil money there. BYU is one of the top for college basketball. Arizona is one of the top for college basketball. So it varies on sports. Football, you know, I think Arizona's middle near bottom. But basketball, they're right in the thick of it.
So it really makes it difficult for people like you that follow this for a living to make prognostications and predictions about how good a team will be. Am I on to something here?
Well, in terms of spring practice, because I've had people ask me out of spring, are they going to be a bold team? I don't know, because the roster isn't necessarily set. Now, you can't enter the portal. The portal window is closed, but there's still players out there. The portal window opens at specific time. I forget the date and all that, but they're still going to have incoming freshmen come in during training camp. You're going to have other transfers that came in after the spring period come in. So your roster really isn't finalized until, I would say, about the beginning of training camp, mid-training camp. And then from that point on, you could really get a good idea for how a team's going to be that season.
And by the way, a listener just notified me that this Texas billionaire has donated, get this number, if this is accurate, $55 million so far to Texas Tech. How about that, Troy?
Yeah, and I think about 34 of that was to the recruiting class that they're in the process of signing. But that also goes to Texas Tech softball. Nidri Kennedy making $1 million last year. She's going to make $1 million this season. And that's for a sport, no offense to Nidri or any college softball out there, that is a non-revenue sport. You're not making money off of that. You're losing money off of that. The moneymaker is football and sometimes basketball, but you're paying a student athlete $1 million to come try to win a championship when you're not really generating any revenue as a university.
All right, Troy Hutchison, stick around. We'll talk some more. Troy Hutchison is the Wildcat beat reporter for Sports Illustrated, and we'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, 79 degrees. That is so delightful over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, where we send a lot of our listeners to a beautiful area of the southwest portion of the state of New Mexico. Look at their forecast, 80s. I like it. Real nice, only about a three-hour drive over to Silver City, southwestnewmexico.org is your great starting place for a terrific weekend in the land of enchantment. Troy Hutchison is the beat reporter covering the Arizona Wildcat Athletics for Sports Illustrated, and he is with us on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. In our first segment with Troy, we're talking about Texas Tech University, where there seems to be a lot of oil money going in to their recruiting class for their football team. So I guess, Troy, we'll find out if money buys a really good team, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's something that has been going on in college sports for a very long time. You look at stacked rosters, even in traditional powerhouses like your Notre Dame's, Alabama's, Ohio State, USC's, back in the day, there's a reason why players go to these teams, not only because they're a great tradition and they're winning football programs, but, you know, if I could go to, let's say, Ohio State over, I don't know, let's say UCLA, because I'm going to get, you know, X amount of money and potentially a car. Yeah, I'm going to go there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's how things have worked in the past for a very long time. And now it's just very much open.
Will this be an entertaining football team at Arizona this year?
I think it will be. I love the hire of Seth Dagey, the offense coordinator. I think it was clear midway through the season that Dino Babers as an OC wasn't going to work out. The game's kind of passed him in terms of play calling. I think he could be a decent head coach, but play calling, the game's kind of passed him. I didn't think that the offense really made sense. I didn't think that it fit strengths on the team, and it was kind of clunky. Seth Dagey comes from the Texas Tech system, the Mike Leach system, where he played college football then, and then played, was an assistant coach underneath Leach for a little bit there as well. But then he also came from Marshall this past season as an offense coordinator. And even though it's an air raid system, Marshall was 20th in rushing, high tempo offense. So he's the guy that adapts to the roster he has.
Will there be a lot of expectations for second-year head coach Brent Brennan, who came over here from San Jose State University, coached over for the Spartans, but his lineage does go back to Dick Tomey and what many consider kind of the U of A football golden years.
Yeah, you know, I think the expectations were high coming in. And at the time when you have a starting quarterback like Noah Fafita, a star player like Petro McMillan, and a solid defense around you, expectations are going to be high. But, you know, they kind of started behind the eight ball last year. Raymond Polito was supposed to be the starting left tackle for Arizona. He quit football right before the start of the season, but really didn't even participate during that training camp. So you're behind on the offensive line there. Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, after that phenomenal game against New Mexico, the NCAA decides he's out of eligibility, and they keep on holding. And by game eight, you realize he's not coming back. So you're missing your star running back. And it just kind of piled up with injuries on top of that. So I think this year expectations are very low. The Big 12 didn't have a Big 12 media poll, which is kind of weird, but they went without that. But I think if there was a media poll, Arizona probably would have been near the bottom of the Big 12, somewhere in that 10 to 16 range this upcoming year. But I think they're going to exceed expectations, even though I think fans' expectations are low too. I think they're going to be around a 6 to 7 win team and make a bowl game.
I would agree with you. There's nothing like the position of where people think you're going to stink this year, and then it's easy to kind of live up well beyond what people are expecting in those kind of circumstances. So it might be a real fun season. How about for our basketball fans who are pointing ahead to the beginning of the season, which will come? The training will begin in first week of October, Troy Hutchison.
Yeah, you know, they're going to have their red and blue game the first week of October. I think that's set for October 3rd, which is a month out from the start of the season. If anybody's been following Arizona basketball this offseason, Tommy Lloyd and their top recruit, Cole P, just competed in the U19 World Cup, bringing home back-to-back gold medals for Team USA and back-to-back seasons of the World Cup. For Cole Pete, it's his fourth. He becomes the most decorated Team USA junior team member of all time with four gold medals. So this recruiting class coming in with Cole Pete, Braden Burries, and Dwayne Arstead is one of the better recruiting classes in U of A history. It ranks number one in the country, seven recruits deep. Also features Bryce James, who I don't think will play a massive role this season. But you also bring back Jaden Bradley, Toby Awaka, Privas, and Anthony Del Rosso. So I think this team's going to start in the top 15. I'd probably put them at number 11 to start the year, but I think it's a team that could win the Big 12. It's going to be highly competitive with Houston and Kansas and Baylor, but I think it's a team that could win the Big 12, win the Big 12 tournament, and be a two seed in the NCAA tournament. And as a freshman the freshmen are going to be key this season. I can see Arizona getting to an Elite Eight, even possibly winning a title.
Wow. Good news for all of our basketball friends. And Coach Lloyd has been very vocal about he wants more energy, Troy Hutchison, at McHale, with that, you know, to kind of get that back to that home court mojo. Were there some changes that they could make seating-wise to make that happen?
You know, I think there's one massive change, and they're never going to do it, is move the student section in the middle of the court opposite from the players and coaches' benches, because you don't want them behind that, but opposite of it. But they're not going to move the people that pay big-time bucks to sit there. That's just not going to happen. But the reality of McHale is that it's kind of gone downhill over the last 20 years. I don't think it is what it used to be when I grew up. Some small things that you could do is I think the stadium lighting isn't very good. When Sean Miller came in, they did the NBA showroom lighting there.
Yeah, I like that.
I think if you brighten it up, I think if you brighten it up to what it was, it kind of wakes up the crowd.
Yeah.
But the reality is if you go to these games, and I've seen it, you know, you see these kids and these fans, not even kids, but 30, 40 year olds standing and cheering, which is what you're supposed to be doing. And you have somebody yelling at them to sit down. So if you don't want to stand up, don't go to the game.
Sit down.
Stay at home. Stand up and cheer.
Yes.
So I think the crowd's just gotten a little old, to be honest. So,
all right. Troy, how can we follow you at SI.com? What's the deal?
Yeah, so you can follow all our stuff on Arizona Wildcats on SI. We also have an Arizona Wildcats on SI Twitter. And you can follow me on Twitter at thutch1995.
Very good. So proud of you. Thank you very much, Troy.
Thank you, Bill. Have a good day.
Thanks very much. Troy Hutchison, what a fine young guy. What a great career he has ahead of him now with Sports Illustrated. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up. Midway edition of the Buckmaster Show. We'll be back tomorrow. One of our topics, why do some people just not get COVID? There's like 1 in 10 that are probably not ever going to get it. Now, why is that? We'll explore that tomorrow. Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.